Welcome to the world of Pokemakers.
I'm Professor Fierce.
And I'm Professor Fierce.
But if that's too confusing, you can call us
JD
and Alex.
For some people, Pokemon are pets.
Others use them for battles.
We're here to create all new Pokemon
and a world for them to inhabit.
Last time, we continued expanding the map of Rentia, creating locations like Quintura, Arpona, Torempo, Viona, and Pito.
We also made some Pokemon. Gondalli, which evolves into Arsenalli, a Pokemon based on Adelaide's.
And the Venetian Arsenal. Originally, we made those as water and water wind types respectively, but on reflection we've decided we're going to change that actually a little bit. We're going to replace the water type in both of those with fighting type for a couple of reasons. Fighting type in Pokemon has often been associated with sailors. We struggle with making fighting types in general, and this way we get to apply the ability that we made last season for Ulcean Gastrodon, Sea Legs, a variation on the Steelworker ability that Delmise has among other abilities that powers up water type moves. So we'll replace Swift Swim on both those with sea legs.
Yay!
Today, I'm still sick! There's been so much sickness. We've been passing sicknesses back and forth. It's great. It's so much fun. It made last episode a week late.
It's been like a month.
I wish I remember what health felt like.
We're struggling. Let's make some Pokemon.
Well, we might, but later. Today, we're going to start talking about the secret plot twist villain, aka the head of the museums of Rentia.
Oh.
Let's go to the Fame Checker. Alex.
Yes.
Have you played a Pokemon game from Generation 7 onwards?
Yes.
Did you know that they have super secret plot twist villains now?
Are they secret?
Yeah! Let's talk about that. Old school Pokemon games. Yeah. The villains were incredibly straightforward and laid out from the start. Yeah. As soon as you met them, it's like, yeah, that's the bad guy.
Yeah, I would argue that's still the case.
Well, Generation 6 in Kalos, which, have we recorded since Pokemon Day?
No.
Hey, Kalos, that's a thing. Anyway, we'll probably talk more about that in the future when there's stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
But in Generation 6, in X and Y, in Kalos, I really felt like they had the opportunity to do a bait and switch on the villain there. Because you have Lysandra and Diantha talking, and it's just so miserably obvious that Lysandra is the villain. He's like, well, I think that only beautiful things should be allowed to exist and that we should murder and eradicate things that aren't pretty. And Diantha's like, no. That's wrong. And it's like, wow, I wonder who's the bad guy here. And I was really hoping that they pull a bait and switch and actually Diantha was going to be the villain. And Lysandra was just this really over the top kooky guy who's like, I mean, yeah, I said that, but I wasn't going to do it. I'm not evil.
I don't mean it.
But no, Lysandra is just one of the most miserable, painfully obvious villains of all time, and he sucks. But Generation 7 started to pull a twist on us.
Because
obviously, the villains of Alola, of Sun and Moon, are...
Not Team Skull?
The evil team? What? Guzma, leader of the team.
My boy Guzma?
It's your boy. Turns out, plot twist, actually, Lusamine, head of the Aether Foundation, is the final villain of the game. Because she's doing stuff with aliens!
Yeah. Actually, I was kind of mean earlier when I was like, you never see it coming. In that one, I think it is actually a pretty decent turnaround.
It's semi-subtle at least, especially if Pokemon has not done anything like that before.
Yes.
It is slightly offset by the fact that the opening cutscene to the game does spoil the Aether Foundation are bad guys.
Yes. But it does do a pretty good job of establishing Team Skull as potentially bad.
I mean, Potown.
Yeah.
Like, they're not...
They're not great.
Team Skull are not good.
Yeah.
They're still villains.
Yeah.
Unlike in Generation 8, where the evil team are not vaguely evil. They're as evil as Bulk and Skull from Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Team Yell, the villains of Galar in Sword and Shield, are just overzealous football fans who are kind of mean to some people.
Yeah.
But also really like Pokemon.
Yeah.
And really just really like Marnie. And
they're,
eventually,
not
they just become allies and help you out.
Yeah. I think when I say the twist villain is super obvious, I specifically mean Gen 8.
Chairman Rose was very obvious. He does the opening spiel usually done by the professor of the region.
Yeah.
And it's immediately obvious from that opening cutscene that he is the villain of the game.
He's like, I don't trust that guy.
Yes.
I will give Gen 9 also isn't the worst.
Hold that thought. We've got another game to talk about before we reach Gen 9.
Oh.
The best twist villain.
That one is good.
In Pokemon Legends Arceus.
That one one is good.
Because this one actually got me.
I saw it coming.
A lot of people did at least get notes of it.
Yeah, some
some people really saw it coming, and some people...
He's talking kind of funny, wouldn't it? It'd be kind of funny if it actually turns out Oh, wait.
Volo, the friendly traveling merchant who is your only ally when you are evicted from the town, actually personally hates you specifically and wants you to die... Because you stole God from him?
Yeah. Legends Arceus, killing it. Twist villain.
And by it, you mean the player. Gen 9. The professor of the game, who you do not meet in person at any point prior to this, is the villain. But also died before the game started.
See, that I find very compelling.
Oh, it's great. It's so interesting.
Yeah, that being a twist villain is also, I think, very good.
It's obvious from the get-go that something is going on with the professor.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily clear exactly what.
Yeah.
In season 1, we didn't do the twist villain thing. We just went very straightforward with it.
Yeah, traditional Pokemon game.
But we've talked about this a lot already. We are going with the quote-unquote twist villain this time, being the curator of Metro's main museum and the museum network in general, the head of it all.
Basically your boss.
Kinda. Like your boss's boss. So I think this person does have a little bit of an air of skeeviness, kinda, in that like they're clearly profit-driven, which you and your base museum are not about that.
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
in it for the science, the history, the art, the love of the research and the knowledge. This person is in it for cash.
See, that's interesting. I don't think that's necessarily their entire motivation.
Probably not, no. But they are self-interested.
Yes. I think his goal is that he wants to be remembered in history. He wants to be alongside those figures that he's studied. Maybe part of his goal is that he wants his museum to be so successful that it lasts forever. That is how his name goes down.
Mm.
I think that that ties in really well with the themes we have going on for the game.
Mm.
That it's not just about the money. It's more about the success.
That said, I think he's interested in fame and fortune now.
Yes.
And not just later, not just in history.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
As part of the inspiration behind the character, I want to consider the Medici family.
Okay.
The Medici family were essentially the ruling family of Florence during the Renaissance, and not through like elections or anything like that, just through having the money.
Yeah.
They invented the modern concept of banking.
Interesting.
And banks in general, and checks and balances, that whole system.
Interesting.
And that can play into the money interest side of this.
Yeah.
They're an important historical family within Italy who essentially kind of died off. And I'm thinking this character is the last in the line
the last of remaining this family member.
Who were once practically royalty and now reduced to less than that.
And so it's also part of trying to reclaim that heritage, get back to that status.
Reclaim that history.
Exactly.
So Medici just comes from the word medic, the old Italian word for doctor, essentially.
Oh.
So I think this character is a doctor in that they have studied, they have a PhD.
Yeah, like, do you mean medical doctor or do you mean like...
No, I mean they've studied, they are a doctor of science, history, and art. They have multiple doctorates, of course.
Oh, yeah. No, I love that. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
We've been referring to them as a curator, and we have our professors, and we have director Donna, but I think they are referred to in-game by the title of doctor. That's like their trainer class, essentially.
Yeah.
Pretty much all Pokemon characters, but in particular, the villains, do draw their names from flowers.
Mm.
So maybe we need to draw on some flowers here.
Okay.
Okay, I've got a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Ginseng, you know, the roots of certain kinds of plants that is used in a lot of traditional medicine.
Ah, interesting.
It's used in a lot of old remedies, especially in a lot of Asian countries. Ginseng was actually an item in the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon series.
Oh, interesting.
As a consumable medical item in those games.
Mm.
Is that anything? Dr. Ginseng?
Maybe.
All we do is a pun. His first name is Jim.
I think the only issue I have with Dr. Song is not giving them some kind of musical motif.
But the whole game has a kind of musical motif.
Oh, that's true.
With our cities and towns and stuff.
Dang, you're right.
So this way, the guy's got the name Song. I'm like, yes, because we are in a musical place. I am the song of Rentia.
I'm at the center of everything.
Yes, I am the song of Rentia, this musical region.
When everything comes together, all the bits and pieces, I am what everything
is. Like we have in Capolina, we have the idea of you're building up the music as you improve the city and stuff. This is the music. He is the music itself.
Or at least he thinks so.
Yeah, of course. And gets the most awesome battle music as a result.
Oh my gosh. Full orchestra.
Yeah. Oh, a vocal song.
What?
Ed Sheeran performs our villain's music. Do you think we could get Ed Sheeran on the podcast?
To voice our villain?
Well, I was going to say to perform live the music for him.
Well, I'll reach out to him.
Yeah. I feel like we've come around on song.
Yeah.
And therefore ginseng.
Yeah, Jim song.
Like, it doesn't have to be Jim, necessarily.
I like Jim.
Okay. We're going with Dr. Jim song. Let's nail down some more of the basics first. What does this guy look like? And then we'll get into, like, his role and his connections.
I have been picturing him as the most stereotypical old white guy historian.
David Attenborough?
Kinda, yeah. Or his brother.
Richard Attenborough?
Yeah.
Have you just been picturing the gentleman trainer class from Pokemon?
Oh, look, that's him. Yeah. There he is. That's the guy. He's more distinct. He has a nicer suit.
A very nice suit.
Yeah.
The mustache is there.
Yeah.
How about a pince-nez?
Okay.
Just a very small little...
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
I think he's a little bit younger than these guys as well.
A little bit.
He's like Larry's age.
Yes.
He's Larry, but if Larry were evil. What other accoutrements? What other accessories? Sometimes the gentleman has a cane. Does he have a cane?
No.
Consider with the cane, though.
Mm.
And the top of the cane is a Pokeball.
Yeah. So far, everyone that I have drawn that works for the museum
mm-hmm.
has had an ID badge that they wear.
Yeah.
He doesn't need one.
Of course not.
He does not have an ID badge. It's just assumed that you know who he is.
Yes. If there was like a scan point or whatever, it's on his cane.
Mm. Usually what happens is people just open the doors for him before he gets there.
Well, or is he like, no, no, we have the best security in the world. I'm going to respect the security system. Blah, 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 blah.
Maybe.
Which is going to get disproven throughout the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's fun. He just denies the whole time that there's any kind of security issue.
Yeah, or he's like, how could this possibly happen? And blames everyone around him for any flaws in the system. It's never his fault.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it's definitely his fault. Okay, so we've got an idea of who this guy is as a person. Perhaps now we should talk a little bit more about his role in the story and plot in the experience share. The final big confrontation of the game involving the legendaries will involve this guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of his big plan.
Yeah.
Team Royal aren't directly involved with that.
Yeah.
We have not really nailed down exactly what it is that's going on with our legendaries beyond you're building up the statue of your legendary.
Yeah.
And the museum in Metro, his museum, has the other statue already.
Yeah.
So as part of wanting to reunite them, he is very much supporting and encouraging what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Collecting the pieces
yeah.
and parts of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's very friendly.
He encourages you to get the statue completed because then he can revive the legendary to bring them both together. For what end? For what purpose?
So there's two options here.
Yeah.
Either because reviving these Pokemon or reuniting the statues or whatever
mm-hmm.
does something, some catastrophic event or whatever, yeah. usually, that he misconstrues as something positive.
Classic.
Or he's doing it because he thinks that just the act of reviving these statues will put him down in history.
Okay.
And he doesn't know about the repercussions.
I like both of those.
Yeah.
My problem with that is, after all is said and done, I want the legendaries to be revived, to be together.
Yes.
There has to then somehow be a way to counteract whatever terrible thing happens with them.
We know that the statues that these Pokemon have sacrificed themselves in
yes.
some way to stop something.
Yes. Sacrifice their love.
Maybe whatever it was is contained with them.
Okay.
You restore the statue, restore the thing that they were trying to stop. But now that it's the modern day and it gets re-released, you with your great Pokemon team are able to defeat the thing.
They have frozen themselves in marble and bronze as a seal against
yes.
the third legendary Pokemon.
Yeah.
They sealed away Etanatus.
Yeah.
Or Necrozma.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And we don't have to worry about what that third Pokemon is now.
Yeah, no, not really.
In the future, we'll talk about some cataclysmic Pokemon.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, does Dr. Song specifically want to bring about the third Pokemon?
Or does he not know about that part
yeah.
of the thing? I can't imagine that he wouldn't know. I think he's done enough specific research and digging that he does. But maybe he either thinks
that... He thinks
that,
he can control it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He thinks that he alone will be able to stop
because
it.
Because he is Rentia.
There's some, like, prophecy or something that's like, the heart of Rentia will defeat this thing
oh,
or something.
Oh, I do like a prophecy.
You know, like, that kind of phrasing.
Disturb and... not the harmony of fire, ice, and lightning.
He thinks that the prophecy means him and his family. But really, it's just when everyone bands together.
Thus the earth. Shall turn to ash.
Yeah. But I think in this circumstance, it's not a chosen situation.
Yeah.
It's a...
Or it's not a chosen one.
That's what I mean. It's not a singular person. The whole point is that you need...
It's bonds.
Bonds of people is the true power, is persona thing.
Oh, whatever the third legendary is when we get to it, it's covered in chains. Bonds.
Oh.
Muppet Jacob and Bob Marley.
that you reunite the two statues and there's this dramatic scene.
The chains began to explode apart.
Yeah, yeah. And we're Marley and Marley.
Whoa.
Just ruin the tension.
That said, I now have to keep this in because what you have just said has inspired me for an idea.
Oh, no.
No, it's great. Because you mentioned how you reunite the statues or whatever, and then whatever happens. His museum is built on the resting place of the third legendary.
Oh.
And, like, there's some super secret, like, you know, in the same way as a Hammerlock Stadium is where he does research into Eternatus, Chairman Rose does. He's built the museum on top of this, and there's, like, some secret access way that
there's
only
like
he can get through.
There's, like, an underground catacomb situation that goes deeper than the city, than anyone knows. And that's why he picked that location, is because he knew about that. He wanted to keep it close and keep it guarded.
And then there could be some kind of myth to that connected to the multiple hills around the city as well. Like,
oh,
the hills.
It's like the center of all the hills. Yeah. This stuff writes itself.
It's great.
We're getting into some Da Vinci Code territory, I think, but in a fun way.
And so in order to access this super secret secured area that he's sealed off that only he can access, you have to get Dr. Song's cane with the access thing. So you have to defeat him in battle to get the cane from him. As like a key card item, effectively.
You brought it back!
Yeah!
That circles the whole thing!
There will probably be more moments that we can talk about as we go ongoing, but there's one in-game event I want to talk about. It's an idea I've had for a while for an event involving Dr. Song. We've hinted that like Dr. Song will be having shady dealings with Team Royal.
Yeah.
At some point during the game, Team Royal are going to kidnap him.
Oh.
As part of their plans, and they're going to hold him for ransom. This part of the plot is based on something that actually happened to Julius Caesar. Again, someone who very much identified himself with Rome and
as
an emperor. Dr. Song is putting himself in the position of Julius Caesar and making himself to be that important.
Absolutely.
But Julius Caesar was once kidnapped by pirates and held for ransom.
Oh, I think I know this story.
Yes. So they tried to ransom him for 20 talents, a talent being worth somewhere from 1,000 to 30,000 US dollars today.
Sure.
So let's take the high end of that, 30,000. That would therefore be $600,000 is the ransom.
Mm.
But Julius Caesar was outraged by this and said he was worth at least 50 talents, so that would be $1 million as a ransom.
Yeah.
And the pirates found this hilarious and they loved it and they kept him around because he was, you know, a very clever, funny individual.
Yeah,
so like they enjoyed having him around. He recited speeches and poems with them. Like Caesar also said as well to the pirates whilst he was captured that once he was free, he would come back and kill them all. And he was true to his word. After the ransom was paid of 38 days, he went back and had the pirates all killed.
Incredible.
So Dr. Song is held ransom by Team Royal. Whilst kidnapped, he is completely calm the whole time. Obviously, the player is the one who shows up and saves him by battling Team Royal getting him away.
Someone's like, the director's been kidnapped.
And after the fact, it'll be off screen, but you will find out that the director has taken intense vengeance against Team Royal. That's Dr. Jim Song.
Excellent.
And his role in the plot. I've got an idea that I want to share for his ace.
Oh.
In Who's That Pokemon? Jim Song, such an important figure in this in this region. His ace Pokemon will be the Knight of Rentia.
Oh.
It's time for our 11th night. His Pokemon is currently wearing the armor. Essentially, you can't get the Knight of Rentia yourself until after you defeated him.
Yeah.
Because in defeating him, his ace Pokemon will end up losing the armor. I don't know exactly how that works, because obviously the way we've got it set up for the others is that you're fighting the spirits of the previous knights, not a currently living Pokemon, and we don't want to murder his Pokemon.
Yeah.
So I don't quite know how that'll work. But the important fact is he uses the Knight of Rentia. At least eventually. Maybe you battle him at an earlier point of the game in a friendly battle before he's evolved this Pokemon.
Yeah, he's like, oh, welcome to the team. Like, let's see what you're made of.
So you can see the Pokemon as it is in its prior state.
Yeah.
The first two stages will be a Pokemon that is very emblematic and representative of Rentia the best we can, because we're making this specifically to become the Knight.
Yeah.
Unlike the other Pokemon where we're working with what's already there.
Yeah.
There's an animal that is very emblematic of Italy that we've not had a chance to use yet, because obviously ideally it would have been used for the legendary Pokemon.
But we didn't want to because they did that in Sword and Shield.
The Italian Grey Wolf.
That's perfect.
Exactly. An Italian Grey Wolf line that then becomes the Knight of Rentia.
Yeah.
For the sake of the Knight determining its type, because obviously with our previous 10 Knights, we made it so that they represented all 20 types.
Right.
Once each. So there's going to be overlap here, but I think the logical thing to do for this night is wind, astro.
Yeah.
Combine those two types and have that be, that's how it represents this region in a way that makes sense uniquely. And then maybe the first two stages are one of those two types, or maybe they're actually completely different types. I'm not sure. Essentially a three-stage line by virtue of the night, but the first stage will be some kind of wolf puppy, then an adult wolf, and then a wolf knight.
Bipedal.
Yeah. This can also be marble and bronze colored. Because that's not too different from the colors it is naturally.
Yeah.
And then it matches his trainer.
Yeah.
Who has therefore obviously styled himself after this Pokemon that is an icon of Wrencher.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. The first few stages will be very much clearly wolf.
Yeah.
Something akin to Lycanroc in shape.
Well, Lycanroc and Rockruff have the rock type stuff feeding into their aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe decide on what we're doing type wise.
Yeah. Oh, I had one idea actually. I brought up the idea of constellation Pokemon before.
Mm.
So what if it's a very constellation themed wolf? It is a lupus.
It is
a wolf constellation incarnate.
That's cool.
Then we'd be very much going with the astro type.
And that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like astro wind, like Northern Lights.
Auramis.
That's, I mean, I'm writing.
Aurora, Armis, Auramis.
Correct.
Yeah, that's quite nice.
Yeah, so that's the aesthetic that it has in its night form when it gains the wind type.
I want it to still be very clearly furry, though. I think Lycanroc and Rockruff have kind of got that going on, but in the Pokemon model way that doesn't quite make it clear, and also they're rocks.
Yeah.
I want this to be very obviously, like, it has fur, whilst also looking like you're looking into space when you look at this thing.
Like looking at a black cat, and it's like, that's the void.
That's fun.
That's the void, but it's fuzzy. I'm not picturing it black, though.
No. I had mentioned it being the marble and bronze colors.
I don't know how well that's gonna work with this aesthetic.
Yeah.
You might be able to lean into that greenish blue patina color.
Mm. The marble could be the stars.
The stars could be that color as well. I can work with that. Yeah. So Stardog.
That's the name.
Stardog, Sirius.
Lupus.
We've got to draw on the word lupus. Yeah, here. Absolutely.
Like, for the constellation for Lupine, Pokemon has not used that in any of its wolf-like Pokemon.
Has it not?
Well, it hasn't actually done that many wolf Pokemon.
I guess that's true.
Lycanroc is really the closest thing, and that's going with Lycan rather than lupus.
Yeah.
Stelupus.
Stelupus is great.
Stella, Latin star. Yeah. Lupus, Latin wolf. Stelupus.
Stelupus.
As the evolve stage.
Yeah.
Wolves have cubs, right? Rather than puppies. Or pups. Yeah.
Cubstellation.
That's a better pun.
But it's
much worse name, especially for an unevolved Pokemon.
Yeah, I agree.
Lupup.
Lupup is,
it's a wolf puppy. Lupup. We were overthinking it as we usually do.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lupup into Stelupus into Auramis, Knight of Wrencher. Do we play with the types a little bit there as well? Like, is Lupup, maybe that's just a normal type and it becomes normal Astro and then Wind Astro or something?
Could be.
Is that too much?
Because, the name Lupup doesn't necessarily imply
it's just a wolf. Just a little wolf. A little wolf.
Little wolf. And then go into the Mordstari. I'm trying to visualize how you would merge the gap between those two. Because it would have to have some sort of design that would lend itself to becoming that constellation look.
Yeah. It's just less spacey looking at that unevolved stage. It's more of a fluffy wolf puppy.
Yeah.
And then the stars start shining through when it evolves before becoming surrounded by astral wind. Which sounds like, actually, that's probably a good name for a move.
Yeah, it was a good name for a move.
Along the lines of Flying Press, that's both fighting and flying type.
Mm.
Astral Wind, both wind and astro type.
Abilities?
Yeah. Auramis,
It
will have one ability, Sacred Armor, the same as all of our other knights. As a reminder, Sacred Armor makes it immune to all moves to which the Pokemon's first type is usually weak.
Mm.
So in this case, that would be the wind type.
Yeah.
Which still means it's set apart from Turbarmis and from Ignarmis. Our previous knights that had wind and astro type, they were the secondary type in both.
Oh, cool.
We could have had the types essentially go either way and still have that unique aspect to this. As the knight, does it need to be primary astro? Should it be astro wind or wind astro? Because the sacred armor means it does matter.
Mm. I think astro is the more predominant type.
Yeah. So does that mean it goes from being normal to astro normal and normal gets demoted to the secondary type in the evolve stage?
That's the kind of thing that, I don't really know what difference it would make.
Yeah, it doesn't make much difference. Abilities for Lupup and Stelupus. We've talked about it protecting the museum.
Mm.
Guard Dog.
Is Guard Dog an ability? I was just going to ask.
Guard Dog is an ability as of Generation 9.
Ooh.
It was briefly a signature ability of Mabostiff, but Okidogi was also given it as a hidden ability.
Oh, then yeah, that seems fine. What's it do?
Prevents other Pokemon from forcing the Pokemon with this ability to switch out or flee using moves like Roar, Circle Throw, etc.
Okay.
Additionally, if a Pokemon with this ability is affected by Intimidate, its attack stat will increase by one stage rather than decreasing.
You wanted it to distinctively have fur.
Mm-hmm.
Fur coat?
Fur coat.
Have the damage taken from physical moves?
So far only on Persian and Furfru.
You could really lean into it being fluffy. You could also give it fluffy.
I don't hate fur coat. We could go with adaptability, which is, like, you know, a fairly simple generic ability and flavor. But I like the idea because this thing changes types twice as it evolves. It is adaptable. Yeah. Adaptability simply increases same type attack bonus from 1.5 to 2 times. So it makes moves of its own type more powerful.
Yeah.
And considering it has this when it's normal type as well, it's fun on a normal type. Here's the Pokemon that get adaptability.
Okay.
Mega Beedrill, Eevee, Corphish, Crawdaunt, and Feebas all get it as their hidden ability. Feebas, but not Milotic.
Huh.
Mega Lucario, Porygon Z, all three forms of Basculin, and Basculegion. And then it's also a hidden ability on Skrelp, Dragalge, Yungoose, and Gumshoes.
That's a combination.
A weird range of Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
I think it works there.
Yeah, yeah.
Adaptability is the hidden ability. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
That's our little woofs.
Our woofs.
Yeah.
Oof,
oof. We made some extra dog Pokemon. I think I promised that the starters wouldn't be the only ones.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about the look of Oranis. We've implied it.
Sure,
so
yeah.
So it's taken that form, those colors as well, become upright, and its armor being made of Aurora Borealis.
Yeah.
At this time of day.
This time of night, localized entirely within the armor.
Yeah, so like the color scheme can shift a little bit at that point as well.
Yeah.
Like the proportions. And, like, this, I think, very much plays more into the archetypal view of a medieval knight.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very buff, broad physique.
Yeah. I will specifically be referencing Renaissance.
Yes.
Knight garb.
Yes.
From Italy, specifically.
Yes.
If I can find it.
We have completed the Knights of the Regions. We have our final 11th knight, the Knight of Rensha, working for Dr. Song, the Heart of Rensha.
The self-proclaimed Heart of Rensha.
The Heart of Rensha, or so he believes. Having been talking for a while, my voice is getting gruffer, which is making it great for a dramatic announcer voice.
There's also, like, the specific location he might misconstrue as the Heart of Rensha. We're talking about, like, the center of the hills and stuff. That's something to think about as well.
Yes.
I'm into this
story,
by the way. You doing all right?
Oh, yes. I'm in dramatic announcer mode.
Okay.
So thank you for listening to Pokemakers.
No.
So thank you for listening to Pokemakers.
And thank you to the Pocket Podcast Network for hosting us.
You can find other cool shows on the network such as
School Tank,
Green Mountain Mysteries,
and the TN Rio Show.
Our theme music is by Mike Freitag. You can find him on Twitter at Admiral Amara.
You can also find us on Twitter at Pokemakers.
And you can find us both individually. I'm at CodenameJD.
And I'm at Pichu, PTCHEW.
Don't forget to check us out on the Pocket Podcast Network community Discord.
Or if you prefer, you can send an email to fiercepodcasts@gmail.com.
But until next time, gotta make them all.
Pocket Podcast Network. Quality programming right to your pocket.
Hey y'all, come right in, make yourself comfortable, because you've found the home for favorite OCs. It's a podcast where I, Christina, talk with creators about their original characters, the good, the bad, and the self-inserts. Characters like Atticus Flint, a planet-hopping mentor dad, Jacques Salacci, a solar punk seafaring chef, Sequinox, a season-themed magical girl squad, Sheena the Talking Cow, and a whole team of post-apocalyptic contract writers. To hear about those OCs and more, listen to us on your local podcatcher of choice, and talk to me on Twitter at WaywardOCPod. I hope you enjoy your stay!